stories carry with them great power.
They can transport us into the light and into the dark.
And into a place in between, a land of shadows.
It is in this land where the macabre and the strange reign.
With tales of terror,
tales of hope,
tales of the whimsical,
and the weird.
These are stories told in the shadows.
And we are the Shadow Storytellers. Welcome back to the shadows. Have you missed us? Believe us when we say that we, and everything else that dwells within the shadows, have missed you too. In this first tale of our second season, we'd like to introduce you to some men you could find in pretty much any small American town. By all accounts, they are ordinary. They hold down decent jobs. They're well known in their community. And if you were to pass one of them in the street, you could probably even exchange a wave and a hello without the slightest concern. However, even those who appear ordinary can possess dark, violent secrets. Today, some of these men will toy with a power well beyond their control in a tale we call Very Fine People.
For the first time in what felt like a very long time, Dwight felt good. Damn good. Dwight had almost forgotten what good felt like, and found he liked the taste of it. Sure, things might not actually have been better yet, and every time he turned on the news, everything he heard was still about how the world around him was going to hell in a handbasket. But there was something else in the air now. Optimism. Hope. He knew that they had a long way to go to fix things, but instead of it being a matter of complaining and coming up with ideas that would come to nothing, now they had an idea that would actually work. They would finally be able to make their mark. And so, as he drove through this little slice of suburban heaven toward his best friend Lloyd's place, he smiled. With the window rolled down and his elbow propped up on the sill, he took in the beautiful summer day, the kids playing in the sprinklers on their front lawns, these beautiful homes and the glorious blue sky. Cranking up the tunes and badly singing along to the Beach Boys rocking out, he almost felt like a new man for how good everything felt. Pulling up outside Lloyd's place, Dwight waited for the song to finish before he rolled up the window and shut off the engine. Eyeing the curb, he noted the number of cars that were already here, and was happy to see that the others had made it. Ron, Rick, Big Mike, even the Duck, who held on to his college punctuality almost as much as he held on to his damn fool college nickname. Jerry's car wasn't here yet, but since he was likely still picking up snacks, that was to be expected. Other than that, though, it looked like the gang was all here. Dwight had already dropped off Marty with Lloyd before he swung by the printers, and... yeah, it looked like everything was set. They were ready. Dwight picked up the cardboard box from the passenger seat, then got out of his car. With a smile, he took in a breath of that warm summer air, admiring Lloyd's immaculately kept front yard. The grass was green and well-groomed, the gnomes that guarded the entrance shiny and clean, and the American flag hung next to the front door looked as bright today as it did when he'd first hung it up there. It took a lot to keep a tear from coming to his eye, as it felt impossible for this day to be any more perfect. At the front door, Dwight balanced the box in one arm while knocking with the other. Lloyd opened the door quickly. A skinny man with nervous eyes, even when you caught him on a good day, he looked squirrelier and more nervous than usual today. "You should get inside quick," he warned, grabbing Dwight by the wrist and pulling him indoors. "We still got that hornet's nest in the backyard, and I don't know if they're those Oriental murder hornets or not, but they sometimes fly out this way, and you don't want to be stung by one of them, let me tell ya." With the front door closed behind the two men, Lloyd breathed a sigh of relief, then asked, "You bring that wasp and hornet spray like I asked?" Proudly, Dwight patted the top of the open cardboard box he carried. "Got the spray cans right in here, along with those t-shirts we ordered from the printer. I'll pay you back for my share of those, I swear," Lloyd interrupted. Laughing softly, Dwight brushed Lloyd's concerns off. "They came out so well, these are on me. Ditto that special project I got the wife to work on. I gotta say, she really outdid herself this time." Though he still looked particularly twitchy, Lloyd smiled and replied, Thanks. I really appreciate it. I think we all do, but... God, there's something we gotta talk about. What's wrong? Dwight asked, his voice full of concern. It's... Well, the other guys, they're in the man cave waiting for us all to get here. But before they got here, there was... an accident, Lloyd explained. Dwight felt the cold sting of fear threatening to derail the fine day he'd been having and vowed not to let it. What kind of accident? He said, fully aware of what kind of accident Lloyd was talking about, but not wanting to believe it. It's... Just come on into the den, Lloyd said, shaking slightly as he led the way toward the back of the house. With the cardboard box still in his arms, Dwight followed his friend to the room toward the back of the house. Typically, this was a warm, homey chamber, filled up with Lloyd's dad's old stuffed hunting trophies, family photos, and a fireplace that roared during the winter. While little of that had changed, there was one new addition that was decidedly unwelcome. A blood-stained white sheet over a large, unfortunately human-looking shape. Dwight asked, "Is that?" Nodding gravely, Lloyd answered, "Big Mike." Gulping and trying to summon the energy he'd had while listening to the Beach Boys with his arm out the window, Dwight asked, "What happened?" Lloyd sighed. "And Big Mike was, well, he was being Big Mike. You know how he is, or was, I guess. He was the first one here, and while we were hanging out, you know, he was just teasing Marty like he always does. I'd warned him of the danger of it. You know I warned him of the danger of it all. I did. But Big Mike was just playing around, and he must have seen, well, it. And the next thing I know, Big Mike's grabbing his bottom jaw and pulling with those big hands of his and not stopping until his jaw's sitting on the floor and he falls back choking on his own blood." Dwight licked his lips nervously. Big Mike had been an important part of the plan going forward, but not an irreplaceable one. The practical concerns of his foolishness were far more important to consider. "And you didn't call 911 or anything?" Dwight asked. Lloyd shook his head. "No, not at all. I think I was too surprised to do anything right away, but as soon as I thought on it, I told myself, hell no, that you wouldn't want that." "Good man. That was some really good thinking, Lloyd," Dwight replied, pounding Lloyd on the back. "Can we get out of here? It's starting to stink." Oh, of course, Lloyd said, leading his friend back into the living room and closing the door to the den behind him. "We'll have to do something about Big Mike later. I don't know what yet, but I'll think of something. But that's for later. We gotta do this meeting, deal with the important stuff first," Dwight said, setting the cardboard box down on a nearby easy chair. "Of course, but we will deal with Mike at some point, right? I mean, I gotta do something about him in the room before Deborah and the kids get back from the water park, and we gotta figure out what to tell his mom," Lloyd said, nervously wringing his hands as he mentally listed everything they now needed to do because of Big Mike. Lloyd had been like this since they were kids, and as usual, Dwight found himself standing in the necessary place to keep him calm. "We'll deal with all that with plenty of time before you have anything you gotta worry about with Deborah. But first things first," Dwight said, opening the folded-up tabs on top of the cardboard box, keeping himself between Lloyd and the item he'd hidden away at the top of the box. Once he had the object in hand, however, he spun around dramatically and presented the gift-wrapped parcel to his best friend. With wide, surprised eyes, Lloyd took it in hand and smiled his first real smile of the day. "You didn't think I'd forgotten your birthday, did you?" Dwight said, laughing. "I know it's a few days late and that I only had Christmas paper to wrap it in, but you know how things are these days. I got Millie to do the sewing and the wrapping, but I did the buying, so, you know, that's impressive, right?" Dwight was hoping for a laugh, but the way Lloyd looked, you'd have thought he'd just gotten a high five from Jesus himself. "Can I open it now?" Lloyd asked. "I'd be offended if you didn't," Dwight replied, beaming. Lloyd tore through the gift wrap like a kid on Christmas morning before holding up the brand new, black, tactical vest inside. Stitched to it were various patches of bald eagles and American flags, crosses and crossed rifles, and even that skull logo from the Punisher that Lloyd loved so much. Most importantly of all, however, was the patch with their group's logo, a no-nonsense red, white, and blue, PAP. Lloyd looked like he was about to tear up, but since he was a man, he didn't. That's exactly what I wanted this year, Lloyd said. Pounding his friend on the back, Dwight replied, I knew you would, man. I knew you would. While Lloyd's man cave was suitable for most kinds of meetings and had the second most impressive wall of guns out of their friend group, given the importance of today's topic and the need to not be distracted by Lloyd's big screen, gun wall, or pool table, Dwight relocated the guys to the living room. Though there was some arguing at first, once they got a good look at the gear Dwight had brought over, most of their arguments were silenced. Well, these are pretty neat, Ron said, pulling one of the bright red PAP t-shirts over his existing polo shirt. Material's good, I mean, I wish we'd gone with my logo, but it's still nice, and it doesn't even mess with my knife. That's pretty great. For emphasis, he patted the oversized hunting knife he always kept strapped to his hip. He'd never in his life actually been hunting, but after seeing the bridge scene from Predator as a kid and becoming obsessed, that knife was now basically glued to his hip whenever he wasn't sleeping or working a shift at Applebee's. You should try one of these masks. Fuck you, facial recognition! You don't know me! You'll never catch me! The duck replied, for some reason shirtless and wearing one of the group's red ski masks that Dwight's wife had spent all night customizing with the PAP logo on the forehead. With all of the distinctive tattoos on his chest, Dwight wanted to warn him about how his face was the least of his worries, but that wasn't important in this moment. This is all pretty fantastic, Rick agreed, opening one of the many pockets on his tactical vest and checking the watch inside. But how long is Jerry going to take getting the snacks? I've got to get back to the network in maybe 2 hours, and I'll need to get in my suit. He better have gotten Twinkies this time. I'll kick his ass if he didn't bring Twinkies, the duck threatened, bawling his small fists and pounding his chest dramatically. Hey, don't kick my nephew's ass again. I'll never hear the end of it, Ron said, annoyed. But I'm hungry, the duck complained. I got a text from him, Lloyd explained, trying to deflate any tension. He should be here any minute now. We can wait, can't we? Dwight looked over the group of men before him with a distinct sense of pride. He'd never seen a bigger group of badass American patriots in his life, and even though it would have been better if they had Big Mike, his absence wouldn't be the end of the world. Not when they had... Well, that'd be for later. Until then, he looked at the assembled men before him, all of them wearing their finest black and/or camo tactical gear. Some of them wearing the shirts and masks he'd brought, and all of them, even the duck for once, finally having learned to keep their combat boots off the coffee table so they wouldn't get Lloyd's wife on their asses. Jerry might not have been here yet, but since he'd never been all that punctual, Dwight had to admit to himself the time was wasting. Clearing his throat, he stood up before the group. We'll fill Jerry in when he gets here, Dwight said, standing dramatically before the men, trying to take on the gravitas of a general addressing his troops. And until then, I'd like to call this meeting of the Patriots Army of Patriots to order. The others quieted and looked at him with what felt like the appropriate awe, even if the duck still fidgeted in his seat. Licking his lips, Dwight began pacing back and forth slowly, his hands held behind his back. I don't need to tell you, men, that these are dark times. The darkest of times, truly. Every day our rights and freedoms as white, Christian, American men are being rolled back and oppressed. Any day now our guns might be taken from us, and we'll be forced to agree with things that stab at the very core of our principles. And our history, our heritage will be steamrolled and paved over with some cancel culture BS in the name of what they got the fucking gall to call progress. And now... With a voice quivering with fear, Rick asked, What have they done now? I don't know what they've done, but I'm already pissed, the duck exclaimed. Straightening himself up, Dwight explained, They're going to tear down the statue of Colonel Cornelius Chester Thurston Bleef III. More silence filled the room than Dwight would have liked based on his pronouncement. Who? Ron asked. I don't know who that is, but I'm already pissed, the duck exclaimed. Dwight sighed and shook his head. Our town founder? Don't you guys know any history? Oh yeah, I think I did a report on him back in middle school, Rick said. They're tearing down his statue? Why? What did he do? He didn't do anything other than offend their cruel, twisted philosophies, Dwight explained. Nothing about the man or his great deeds have changed for 200 damn years, and now all of a sudden a handful of screaming, radical agitators decide to throw paint, bricks, and soup cans at the statue. And City Hall decides to give in to them just because they're loud and just because they're woke. Lloyd, show them what I mean. Show them the newspaper. Gladly, Lloyd, wearing his birthday present with some pride, said, holding up the local newspaper. Accompanying a picture of a few hundred protesters holding signs standing solemnly around the statue of Bleef was a large, bold-faced headline. Statue of controversial slave-hunting cannibal to be torn down after hours of protests. The duck slapped the coffee table angrily. I'm pissed! Dwight shook slightly, holding back his anger. The fake news media may have infiltrated our once hallowed local once-a-week newspaper, but that picture remains the truth. I've seen them down there surrounding the statue, and it sickens me. It sickens me that they'll tear apart our town's heritage just because they disagree with a man's alleged indiscretions. And it sickens me to know that once they're done here, they'll scatter like roaches and spread their unholy filth to all the corners of the map. For too long we have been oppressed by their unholy ideologies, helpless and unable to defend ourselves from their encroachment on our lifestyles. But to this I say no more. Damn right, Rick agreed. Hell yeah, Ron shouted. Let's fucking eat them like Bleef would have wanted us to, the duck practically screamed, jumping up from the couch and thrusting his fist in the air. Dwight raised his hands, trying to calm his friend. First off, no one's ever been able to prove that about the Colonel, all right? That's all just woke rumors and the like. Secondly, love the enthusiasm, but that's probably too far. The duck sat back on the couch, pouting. They're the ones going too far, and I'm pissed. The only way we can hit back at them is to go even further. This made Dwight grin. Oh, I agree. But if we're going to do it, we got to be smart about it. You see, they think they're smart, that there's safety in numbers, and with all their phones, that if we try anything, they'll just cancel us and sic their police goons on us. Dwight was really glad when none of them brought up the bake sale fundraiser they'd done for a Blue Lives Matter group the year before, because he didn't want any of them complicating the issue. He continued, and then there's the court systems, who've never met a good white patriot that they couldn't steamroll into jail simply for wanting to defend his country. No, no, we can't stand for this. For too long now, men, we've needed an edge that they couldn't see coming, something so unexpected, so powerful, that they couldn't possibly think of a defense against it, and it would make our message come across loud and clear. And by the grace of God and all his infinite wisdom, or maybe just some good old-fashioned good luck, that edge has fallen into our laps. Raising his voice, Dwight called out, Marty, you can come on in now. We need you for once. The door to the storage closet just off the living room opened up, spilling out a gangly teenager with long, stringy blonde hair, no shirt, and a number of misspelled tattoos across his upper chest and arms. Pale and shaky and hunched over, half of his face had been covered up with what looked like a Halloween store Phantom of the Opera mask with one of its eyes duct-taped over, hiding the right half of his face. More difficult to hide, however, were the faintly pulsing, glowing blue vein-like protrusions that seemed to grow downward from underneath the mask, stretching down his neck and into his upper shoulder. It was possible that this might have added to his twitchiness, or that could have just been Marty. You all know my little brother? Dwight said, nodding to the new arrival. You can say hi, Marty. You're welcome now. Aside from sharing political beliefs, Dwight had never had much use for Marty in the past. He was always an idiot, and a troublemaker, sticking his nose where he ought not to and experimenting with drugs that were better left to the inner cities. Still, Dwight reasoned, God created everyone for a reason, and even someone seemingly as useless as Marty would one day have a purpose. Hey, Marty said shakily, waving to the guys. It's good to finally be able to offer something to the cause. He scratched at one of the glowing blue veins on his shoulder, only causing it to pulse more ominously. Dwight slapped Marty's hand away, not wanting him to damage the gift they had been given. Most of the guys politely greeted Marty, as they usually did whenever he was hanging around and being, you know, Marty. The duck wasn't most guys. "The fuck is he doing here?" the duck asked. "You said he wasn't allowed back here, not since..." "Marty's apologized for his lapses in judgment," Dwight said, evenly. "And he's explained that many of them were misunderstandings, he said, she said sorts of things. And after I opened my heart as Jesus would have wanted and listened, I've welcomed him back. You'd be wise to do the same, because he is now our secret weapon." Leaning in curiously, Rick asked, "How?" The duck shook his head. "Yeah, this I gotta fucking hear. How's your dumbass little brother gonna fix our problems?" Dwight smiled, patting his little brother on his non-glowing shoulder. "You want to tell little brother? Or should I?" Dwight said, in a tone that made it clear he wanted to be the one to tell. Looking worried, Marty nodded and touched his mask. It's probably best that you, tell them all and all that, but shouldn't we?" "We'll get to that," Dwight said, squeezing his brother's shoulder again, before going back to addressing his men. "But first things first, I've got a tale to tell you boys." Letting go of Marty's shoulder, Dwight stepped forward, overshadowing his little brother as he had for the past 19 years. A few nights back, round about 3 in the morning, little Marty here was checking in on his ex-girlfriend's place. He'd heard she was dating someone new in the picture, and Marty wanted to make sure that she was safe since he had a gut feeling that this guy might not have been such a nice fellow. He's not a nice guy," Marty muttered defensively, scratching his shoulder. "I'm a nice guy." "I know that. We all know that. And she'll know that soon enough," Dwight continued. "Anyway, when he was taking down his ladder..." "This was before you got the brick, right?" "Yeah," Marty clarified. "Right. Perfect. Anyway, he was going to go get his brick when he saw a light in the sky," Dwight explained. "It wasn't no light," Marty interjected. "It wasn't just a light. It was moving fast and strange. It was bright green and orange and sparking. I know a UFO when I see one. You know, I've seen them before, even when I wasn't on nothing. And that was a fucking UFO." "Bullshit," the duck interjected. "There's no such thing as UFOs. Those are just chemtrail planes spreading all their mind control crap. You probably just saw one of them testing something new, mixing it with 5G or whatever." "It was a UFO," Marty muttered. "Whatever it was," Dwight continued, authoritatively, "it was a blessing in disguise, because for some blessed reason or another, it exploded in midair, and a piece of whatever it was found its way into Marty's skull here." Toying with his knife as he usually did whenever he was confused or skeptical, which seemed to be more and more these days, Ron asked, "Really?" Figuring it was easier to show them than ask them to take his word for it, Dwight spun Marty around, showing off the jagged, faintly purple piece of metal that stuck out about an inch and a half from the back of Marty's skull. More of those glowing blue veins grew under his skin, radiating from this spot, as well as some low, throbbing orange and purple ones. With some concern, Dwight realized that they had spread a little since the last time he'd gotten a look at his little brother's head. It wasn't enough concern to derail their plans, but something he'd probably have to look into later. Dwight twisted Marty back around so that he faced the others, then grinned. "This, gents, this is the game changer. This is what we've been waiting for this entire time. This, whatever it is, stuck in the back of Marty's head, it is the flaming sword we've needed for the longest time that will allow us to strike back at all of those who would oppose us. And the best part of it all? The oppressive laws won't even consider it a weapon because it's so new. We could walk down the middle of the street and kill someone with it, and nobody would do a damn thing about it." "But what is it?" Ron asked, nervously cleaning under his fingernails with the tip of his oversized knife. Dwight eyed his brother, wondering if he could trust him with this. "Marty, you think you can handle this?" Shaking, Marty nodded. It was after I started to run, and that thing smacked me in the back of the head. I turned back as I realized I'd left my camera behind. When I come face to face with Lizzie's folks' German Shepherd, it was a mean son of a bitch looking at me like it wanted to kill me. But then I could just feel it looking into my right eye. Once it looked at me, it stopped growling. And first thing it does is hightail it toward the fence, trying to jump all 6 feet up and over. It almost made it, but it stopped halfway through and it got impaled, I think, on the top of the fence. I mean, I almost felt sad, you know, wanted to help it, but God help me, that dog was determined. It was just kicking at that fence, trying to pull itself deeper and deeper onto those spikes, and God help me, it ripped itself in half. It was real determined. Marty was pale as he said this, shaking softly as if he had seen a ghost. But that wasn't the end of it, was it? Dwight asked. Nah, Marty admitted. I was so scared I needed a place to come down off my fear and all that, so I ran over to Tommy Jorgensen's place, thought he could make me not so scared of what I saw and all that. Dwight didn't let his smile falter at the name of Tommy Jorgensen, a local skinhead and meth cook who Marty used to run with a couple years back. If there were anyone in town who had been arrested more before the age of 18 than Marty, it was Tommy, but even with all those transgressions, Dwight knew him as a hard-working, forthright young man who might have made a good member of the PAP if he'd ever got his head screwed on straight. I snuck through a window at Tommy's place, just needed to talk, and he saw me confused and afraid, and he had a crowbar in his hand. I think I must have woken him or something, and he's about to ask me what the hell I'm doing when he gets this look at me, like this real good look at my right eye. And from there he just tilted his head back, put the long end of the crowbar in his mouth, and just rammed it down his throat. There was... God. There was blood everywhere. He was choking and fighting, and I went to help him. But before I could, he leaned down and sprinted at the wall, just smashing into it and ramming every last bit of the crowbar down his throat until it burst out his stomach, Marty explained, his voice worried and close to whimpering. Dwight patted him on the back, calming. I found Marty the next morning, locked in his room, covering his head with a whole bunch of t-shirts so no one could look at the eye. It seemed to keep things safe. I didn't believe him at first when he told me what happened, but when he showed me Tommy, well, it was hard not being a believer. And then there's what happened to Big Mike, Lloyd interjected, eyeing Marty angrily as the young man sat next to Ron on the couch. Dwight winced. He'd rather not have talked about Big Mike yet, but the cat was out of the bag. Rick and Ron looked confused, while the duck simply looked bored. "What happened to Big Mike?" Rick asked. "It's a long story," Dwight interjected, dropping his eyes down. "One we don't have time for now, not when we're so close to getting what we want." The room fell silent after Dwight and Marty's terrible story, something that Dwight could not allow to stay, not when he had their attention, and certainly not when they were on the brink of their greatest victory. Well, their greatest victory yet, anyway. "You don't get it, guys. With this power, nobody could stop us. That's why we're here today, dressed in our best, with these shirts and masks to hide ourselves and let people know who we are. We're going to film a video, warning them not to take down the Statue of Bleef. And we're going to put it out there on one of those real networks for patriots. None of this fake news nonsense. You can make that happen, right, Rick?" Rick was an old friend of Dwight and Marty's family, but the fact that he worked as a producer at the cable news network PNS, the Patriot News Service, one of the best networks out there that catered to their interests and would be sympathetic to their cause, certainly didn't hurt the current state of things. Running his fingers through his mustache, Rick nodded. "If you guys can put it together, I can get it on the air, ASAP." "Good," Dwight said, considering. "Getting it on PNS is going to be great for all of us, because let's be honest, it's not an easy thing that we're going to do. People will call us monsters for what we've done, but we'll show them. We'll warn them with the video, and if they continue on with their path and tear down the Statue of Bleef, what happens next when we make Marty look at them will be on them. So, any questions?" Dwight was not surprised when the duck quickly put his hand up. "Do we really have to warn them?" the duck asked. "We could take out a whole lot of these assholes at once if we don't scare them off." Dwight rolled his eyes. Warning them is just a formality. Our way of saying that we can be the reasonable ones here. We need to win some people over to the cause, and that'll be loads easier if we let people know that we're willing to let folk live if they just stay the fuck out of our way. I disagree. I think we should kill them all. That'd teach them for whatever they did that pisses me off, the duck muttered, but finally put his hand down. Looking at Marty next to him, Ron quickly raised his hand. What's it look like? What's what look like? Dwight asked. The eye. With all that metal in his head, it had to mess his eye up something really bad, right? I just want to know what it looks like, Ron said. No, you don't, Dwight replied. It's bad, okay? Marty said, shuddering. He'd told Dwight that he had seen the eye in the mirror once, and while it didn't kill him like it killed everyone else who'd got a glance at it, the sight of it had shaken him deeply. Oh, come on, it can't be that bad, Ron said, grabbing at the edge of Marty's mask and pulling it aside. Wait! Dwight yelled, before turning around to avoid catching Marty's gaze. He heard screams and a sick, wet tearing and spilling sound. Then the sound of Marty yelling and wailing and running from the room. Dwight looked up and saw that Ron was still going at it with his giant knife, that despite having hollowed out his own stomach and with everything inside seemingly now on the floor, he was still determined to stab himself to death. Rick and Lloyd were screaming and backing away from the terrible sight, while even the duck sat back in the closest he ever got to stunned shock, though his laughter made this difficult to properly gauge. Dwight heard Marty sobbing in the front room and cautiously approached him. Marty, I'm coming in, all right? I need you to put the mask back on, Dwight warned. Weakly, Marty replied. The mask's broken. Ron pulled the strap too hard when he... Well, then you're gonna have to not look at me, all right? We gotta sort all this out, Dwight said. Oh, okay, Marty said, softly. Dwight entered the front room, catching Marty balled up on the floor, rocking and looking toward the front door. Clearly he had meant to run, and was fortunate that Dwight had caught him in time. You know you can't just run when things get tough, right? That's not what a real man does, and you are a real man, right? Dwight said, sighing. Ron's dead, Marty wailed. Big Mike's dead. Tommy's dead. They're all dead because of me. And that's sad. It really is. Those were all good guys. But it was their own damn fault that they died, not yours. And beside all that, we need you. The cause needs you. I need you. You and that wonderful piece of metal in your head, you're going to change this country overnight. You're going to fix everything. But we can't do that if you run off crying all the time like some kind of woman. You know that, right? Dwight asked. Truthfully, he would have liked to be a lot harder on Marty, but with what he liked to consider a keen understanding of tactics, he knew it wouldn't be wise to antagonize his younger brother too much. Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with me. There's something in this metal, something that sings. I don't think it wants me looking at people. I think this is wrong, Marty murmured, worried. Dwight shook his head. How can it be wrong when we're right? You've railed against those assholes who want to get rid of our heritage more than anyone I know, and you don't want them to get away with that, right?
No, Marty said weakly. They can't get rid of that. They have to pay.
Then let's put your gift to good use, right? Let's be heroes for a righteous cause, Dwight suggested.
Yeah, Marty said, finally standing and cocking his neck. Yeah, okay. I can do this. We can do this. Let's fucking do this!
Dwight smiled at his brother's back, and for a moment, their sacrifices didn't seem all that bad. Oh, sure, Big Mike and Ron's losses would be terrible for all involved, and they would be mourned. But in time, they would be known as martyrs of the highest order, celebrated across the land for how they made possible this great blow against tyranny. He could see statues of them now, strong statues with big bases that would prevent anyone from ever tearing them down.
It was right about the time that he was fully able to imagine these statues to their fallen heroes in his mind's eye that the door opened, and Jerry stepped through with a couple bags of snacks. Jerry said, "Oh, hey guys, sorry I'm late. I didn't know what everyone wanted and didn't want you yelling at me for missing anything, so I got a little bit of everything, and oh, cool shirts, by the way, and what's..." His words were cut off with a single glance at Marty's face. With that, Jerry dropped the bags of groceries and stepped outside, grabbed the first lawn gnome he could find, placed its pointed cap under his chin, and fell forward into the foyer. Jerry and Ron's sheet-covered bodies joined Big Mike's in the den, the sheet for Jerry's in particular looking misshapen for how difficult they'd found it to remove the lawn gnome he'd jammed through his skull. Dealing with their bodies was hard work, but not nearly as hard as it was working with the duck on all of this. Rather than carry any of the bodies, he stepped back, claiming to need to take care of his high school back injury that always managed to come up whenever some heavy lifting needed to happen. "It was weakness," the duck declared, looking down at the bodies on the floor. "They just didn't have what it takes. Real men, strong men, they'd be able to deal with that. But these losers... we never should have been friends with them in the first place. I never was, really. I just dealt with them because you guys all seemed to like them. But I knew they were weak." Walking over toward the living room with a bucket of cleaning supplies in hand, Lloyd looked practically frantic. "What the hell am I going to do about all this mess? My wife and kids are going to be home soon, and there's so much blood!" "Not just blood," Rick commented, tying a bandana around his face. "I think old Ronnie pierced something in his bowels in there." As if this were the most obvious thing in the world, Lloyd declared, "You think?" Dropping his head slightly at Lloyd's yell, Rick muttered, "I'm going to miss those guys." By this point, Marty was more or less walking around comatose. If you told him where to stand, what to do, he would do it, and silently at that. By Dwight's estimation, it was about as useful as his little brother had ever been, and made this day, annoying as it was, almost manageable. With a little duct tape, they had managed to fix his mask, and while it looked a bit looser after Ron had yanked its strap in a bad way, it seemed like they had the problem well under control. Still, Dwight knew that their morale wasn't at its best, and as their leader, he had to rally the troops. "Well, I know this looks bad," he said, dramatically putting a foot on one of the den's footstools and leaning into it. "And that we're all going to miss Big Mike, and Ron, and Jerry. But we must never forget that we're at war. A war for our ideals, and our very identities. In every war, there are going to be casualties, and these will be ours, but we can't let those get to us. We have to remember that once we get our plan in motion, we'll make those heathen bastards trying to take down our beloved statue pay 100 times more than what we've lost here. And when we finish in here and film our video, oh yes, they will fear us. They will fear us, and then they will do exactly as we tell them." While Lloyd and Rick looked like they might have been swayed a little at his words, Marty remained borderline catatonic, and the duck looked less than convinced. Wiping his hands on his ample belly, the duck replied, "Yeah, I'm done." Dwight stared at him incredulously. "Done?" "Yeah, fucking done. You guys are weak, and I gotta spend some time with some strong people who know how to get shit done. All you do is talk, and talk about what you're gonna do when you get a weapon like Marty's head, and I'm done with talk, done with videos, done with all that shit that got your weak asses killed. I'm gonna go home, find myself a better bunch of god-fearing assholes who know how to really fuck shit up, and tell you guys to just fuck off," the duck replied, heading for the door and sparing one last glance for the catatonic Marty. "The others didn't die because they were weak," Dwight explained. Shaking his head and chuckling at what he clearly thought was the obviousness of it all, the duck walked toward Marty and replied, "Yes, they did. Watch!" Before he could even begin to wonder why exactly he'd remained friends with the duck all these years since college, Dwight averted his gaze, knowing exactly what was going to happen next. He heard the pained yell from Marty, the shuffling of the others trying to look away from his brother's glowing eye, and then, rather suddenly, the sound of tearing fabric. Looking cautiously, Dwight glanced at the duck long enough to see that he had ripped off his pants with all the delicacy of a bachelorette party stripper, shortly before defenestrating himself through the nearest window into the backyard. Bleeding and naked, save for his shoes and red ski mask, the duck ran toward a nearby tree and began jumping for one of the low-hanging branches. "What's he doing?" Dwight asked. Looking pale, Lloyd replied, "I think he's going for the hornet's nest." Watching the horror unfolding through the broken window as the duck pulled the nest free from the tree, Rick gulped. "I'd say he's found it, but why is he putting it to his crotch?" The three men looked away from what the duck was doing, unsettled by the loud buzzing of the hornets and the duck's lack of screams. For the first time in as long as any of them had known him, the duck was utterly silent as he carried out this grim act to its inevitable conclusion. "I didn't want to do it! You saw me!" Marty wailed, curling into a ball in the corner. "It feels worse every time, stronger. I can't do this. I didn't want to do this." Dwight chanced to look at his younger brother and found himself slightly disturbed at the sight of those glowing veins in the back of his head. They seemed slightly brighter, slightly longer. It was a concern, but a concern for a later time, especially when he needed to keep Lloyd and Rick's attention. "You guys don't have a problem believing in Marty's eye, do you?" Dwight asked, keeping his tone firm so he was understood. "Nope," Rick said, quickly. Probably bemoaning what was happening in his backyard, Lloyd wailed, "I never disbelieved you!" Knowing that he needed to quarterback this situation before it got any worse, Dwight continued, "Good. Because we still gotta film that video, and we can't afford any more screw-ups. Am I understood?" Getting a good look at the other's worried nods, Dwight approved. "Fantastic," he said, looking at the unfolding problem. "Now, Lloyd, I know you got some duct tape and garbage bags around here somewhere, right?" Yeah, I do," Lloyd replied, happy for something to do other than watch the duck collapse outside. "Good, because we're going to need to cover up that window if we don't want any of those hornets to get in the way of our recording. They sound pretty pissed," Dwight explained, looking back at his brother and feeling certain they could still pull this off even with just the four of them. "Too late," Rick yelped, running through the house as a loud, buzzing roar reached the window. Dwight barely had time to turn around before the first stinger lodged in the back of his neck. It had been a week since that fateful filming day, and the hornet stings had finally begun to fade. It took a while to find the right mix of ointments and painkillers, but once they did, the four remaining members of the PAP were able to more or less act as functional adults who hadn't come across the bad side of a hornet's nest. Lloyd's house was still a mess, but they were able to clean all the incriminating parts up and even film their video before his wife and kids returned home. The fates of Big Mike, Ron, Jerry, and the duck were a lot harder to cover up, but using one of their cars and a few extra gas cans, they were able to stage a wreck and a fire that made their gruesome fates look accidental enough. Losing them was certainly unfortunate, but as Dwight took off early from his orthodontics practice, he was in positively bright spirits. Everything was going according to plan. Bureaucratic hand-wringing had delayed any destruction of the Statue of Bleef, but there were still a large number of protesters camped out in a sort of shanty waiting for that fateful day. Dwight was pleased that there were still people to frighten away, because if there weren't, well, what would the point of all of this have been? Further, Rick had gotten their tape in with the people at PNS, and it was supposed to air this evening. Dwight had arranged for a viewing party at his home, telling his wife to keep the DVR paused until he got back so they could all enjoy their big moment together. Not even the large number of emergency vehicles that slowed traffic and otherwise seemed to be out in force today, nor the incessant texts from Marty, could threaten his good spirits on a day like this. No, not when everything was finally, for once in his life, going his way. He gave some thought to Marty, to how twitchy he'd seemed while they were filming the video, always fiddling with his mask, trying to keep it on, looking more like a petulant child than a badass man ready to take back America. If their plan hadn't revolved so much around Marty's ability, it would have been so easy to cut him off. But sometimes in life, you had to take the bad with the good. Once traffic cleared up, and he was already late for the broadcast, Dwight sped home, driving over to his gated community and parking in the open slot of his home's two-car garage. Already a few cars were parked out front. Definitely Rick and Lloyd and all their families and other friends. No doubt all the kids were playing together, waiting to see their father's big moment on TV, while the wives kept the kitchen full of snacks and cold drinks. You could still hear some of the sirens from town even this far into the community, but it wasn't enough to worry Dwight on his big day. This was it. This was where his life would truly begin. This was where he would find the respect and fear that he had always craved and never gotten in life. This would be the day the PAP would rise. Stepping through the door into his home, he felt like a rock star, surrounded by family and friends who traveled in from several towns away. He knew they were the best possible people to surround himself with, since they all agreed with everything he did and said, and he knew that when they saw the video broadcast on PNS, they would adore him even more. His wife stood by the couch as everyone applauded him, dressed in her best red, white, and blue apron, and handing him the remote for the DVR. Paused on the big screen mounted on the wall, right above the shotgun he kept mounted to defend against home intruders, was an image from a PNS news broadcast, where an older man and a young blonde woman were apparently talking about the destructive wokeness of history erasure and how true-blooded patriots were fighting back. He sat on the couch between Lloyd and Rick, both of them looking a little worse for wear, but glad to be here. "You guys ready to make history?" he asked. His two friends nodded. With all his family and friends gathered and the kids swarming in front of the TV, Dwight knew that everything was finally ready. As that moment came, two things happened very quickly. The first was Dwight pressing the play button on the DVR. The second was his phone loudly vibrating yet again. "Sorry," he muttered, grabbing for the phone to silence it. The blonde PNS anchor said, "In response to this attack on our freedom, a group of brave patriots sent us this tape, which we will be sharing here for the first time with you." As Dwight silenced his phone, he couldn't help but see the three most recent texts sent by Marty. "Mask was loose. Don't watch. So much death." Dwight stared at those messages, uncomprehending, for a while before he looked up at the screen. He saw himself, Lloyd, and Rick, all of them standing in their PAP shirts, red ski masks and tactical gear in front of Lloyd's wall of guns, the best backdrop they could think of. The Dwight on screen was reciting his eloquent, impassioned speech explaining why the Statue of Belief had to stand and why any protesters who remained would be sorry. And then he glanced toward the side of the screen, catching sight of Marty, twitchy and shaking still from what had happened with the others. And he saw it. He saw the mask slip, and he saw that glowing blue eye that Marty had tried to hide from them all. No, more than seeing the eye, Dwight saw into it, understanding a great many things that a moment ago had been beyond his comprehension. All at once, he could see every bad, cruel, mean thing he had done in his life, and feel the pain he had inflicted upon others. Every punch and foul word, every single ounce of hate he spewed and kept inside, he could feel the pain from all of them as if he had been set on fire. It all made sense now, why Marty had been trying to hide this. He wanted to spare them the agony of knowing, of understanding the pain they had inflicted upon others and what it all actually meant. Dwight lived several lifetimes worth of hate and misery in less than a second, and in that life, he understood everything. While the room around him erupted into screams and blood, Dwight knew of only one way to end this agony that set his body ablaze, and dove wildly for the shotgun on the mantelpiece.
Very Fine People was written and performed by Matt Carter. Narration was provided by Fiona J.R. Tichenel. This episode was edited by Matt Carter and Fiona J.R. Tichenel. The Shadow Storyteller's theme, written and performed by Dennis Tichenel. The Shadow Storyteller's artwork by Kristen McQuiggan of Drop Dead Designs. Special thanks to Lisa Onzo and Greg Bowles for the use of their guest room in this recording. For more information on the Shadow Storytellers podcast and our other fiction works, please visit our website at theshadowstorytellers.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe for more information on upcoming episodes. We hope you had fun, and we'll see you again soon.